The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast contains mature content and listener discretion is advised.
Also, be advised, we are not medical professionals and this podcast is for entertainment purposes only.
This is a test of the emergency podcast system.
It is a true emergency.
Quick, run. Love aliens.
Mystery Team Inc.
And we're in.
We're in. Welcome to Mystery Team Inc. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Maggie.
No. No, people are going to be so confused.
Sorry, I got my line wrong. Let's go back again. Let's take it back.
I'm Maggie.
And I'm Kayla.
Wow.
I almost, two take wonder. So I have a story for you, and I think you have something.
I have so many stories for you.
Okay, I just have the one.
Great.
So I got in my car this morning to come here, and I would put Spotify on to play music, and then all of a sudden it switched, and I just heard the opening chords to Country Road, Take Me Home, and I was like, my phone screen was still showing Spotify, and I fully got out of my car to see if you were there. And like connected to my car somehow.
Yeah, that sounds
and pranking
right.
me. And then I almost called you. And then I realized it was playing on my phone.
That's amazing.
It was.
I wish I had pranked you.
Me too, a little.
That'd be brilliant. My phone always opens up
a rumor
Apple.
In St. Petersburg.
Yes. How did you know I was going to say that?
Because that's the song that my phone plays. Because we both purchased the Anastasia soundtrack just to get In the Dark of the Night.
Yeah. So for those who don't know what we're talking about, we both use Spotify. But on Apple Music, they have the original soundtrack to the Anastasia movie. And the only way to listen to the best song in the history of animated child movies In the Dark of the Night, you have to buy the soundtrack, which means the new first song in the alphabet on your Apple Music is A Rumor in St. Petersburg.
Dun, dun,
which
dun,
means your car dun, is going to assume dun, that dun, that's dun, what you want to listen dun. To every time you get into it and connect the Bluetooth.
I think I could orchestrate the first 15 seconds of that song.
Yeah.
St. Petersburg is gloomy.
Okay.
I'm so glad you experienced that. Every day I go, no!
I know, me too. Okay, I have some business for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
So I was watching Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey, which is a new docuseries on Netflix about the FLDS. And it's so weird because if you attend our Dateline Date Night live shows, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, now when this comes out, it'll be several weeks ago, but we finally decided to start covering whatever episode we want to. So I went back a couple seasons and I picked this episode about the FLDS. And then it stars these two women who got out of the FLDS. And then they just released this documentary. And they're basically like some of the leads in this documentary. But remember how you asked on Dateline Date Night, who was the first person to wear that hairstyle?
Yes,
the
they
FLDS?
Explained it.
They explained that Warren Jeffs chose it, and they show footage of a video. It's like an informational video about
it's
how to
so
do the hairstyle.
Good. Yeah, and I didn't realize the whole point of it is to make your head oval.
Is that why it is?
There's something in the video where she goes like,
"Oh yeah, to make
it's
your
how
features
to make a perfect oval."
Yeah.
And I was like.
They show these little cartoons of side by side what flat hair and FLDS hair look like. And it's it's great.
I'm so glad that question was answered. But then I have another question. How did he come up with that?
I mean, I don't think he invented the hairstyle, but I think he chose
it. Where did he see it?
Women did wear their hair like that at some point. It was a style, I think.
So he just like saw some woman in passing and he was like, that's the only hairstyle I ever want to see for the rest of my life.
You
want to
hear the bad news? Like somewhere deep in the recesses of my brain, I feel like it's a mommy issues thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
It might
but
not
yeah.
be, but doesn't give that
no,
vibe.
Oh, yuck, but yes.
Yeah. Yuck, but yes. Another mystery team motto. Okay. Second business. One of our lovely listeners hit me up because they found not only the New York Herald article about the Des Moines man from the Ambrose Small episode, but several articles about the Des Moines man. So shout out to Lauren.
Lauren, I love you.
Lauren DM'd us and was like, check your messages. I sent you the New York Herald article. I was like, thank you so much. And then she was like, no problem. My hobby's genealogy, so I'm pretty decent at stalking dead people. And then...
Lauren, do you want a job?
Kayla, for legal reasons, you have to stop offering our listeners jobs. But yes, so I'm going to send all of them to you. I read through all of them. The big takeaways were the detectives claimed the reward. So that's an interesting piece of information. In most of the articles, it stated that his wife basically didn't believe them. And that she thought that it was like basically a publicity plot for like a local detective agency.
The detectives who were like, please give him proper medical care were out?
No. So there was like a motorist who was like, give him proper medical care and dropped him off at this like local detective.
Okay.
The local detective, it turns out, was a former police chief who like went solo.
He pulled a Zane.
Yes, exactly. But and what's also interesting is that remember we were asking, like, they said that like 3 weeks later he finally spoke or whatever. So according to one article, he was living with a family for like a year after he was
in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. After he was like discarded out the side of a motor car. And then they basically were working with him for like weeks and weeks. He was like non-speaking. He was like non-verbal when he arrived. And then after several weeks, he said words. The other big takeaway was they said, for 3 weeks, the victim was mute. Then he suddenly asked for water. From that time on, he has shown signs of an awakening mentality, but has great difficulty in talking. He constantly writes musical scores, but when asked if he can play, shakes his head. Now the man has begun repeating, my name is John Dowdy. I came here from Omaha. That's all I remember. Isn't that so interesting?
The musical scores thing is really
weird. Yeah, because that's his whole thing.
That is so weird.
Super interesting.
His wife didn't believe it?
His wife didn't believe it. Mrs. Ambrose Small tonight doubted reports from Des Moines that her long-missing husband had been found, believing that Detective Brophy would have at once notified the authorities here since the reward expires September 1st. This article is from, like, August. On consultation with her attorney tonight, it was decided to send Detective Mitchell to Des Moines to investigate the story. Mitchell is the detective who brought Dowdy, her husband's embezzling secretary, back from Oregon. So I guess she sent her own private detective, or I guess he's not private, but sent a detective
and
to investigate.
And then what happened with
that? I didn't see anything in the articles about
Lauren.
That. Lauren, help.
Lauren, help. One more.
So yeah, that's...
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It makes me believe it more.
I know. It's just weird. It is interesting that, like, they claimed the reward. And it seems like nothing really ever came of it.
Yeah. But that makes me think that it wasn't him.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's weird. Like, it's like equal amounts of things came out of this that were like...
It's still net zero.
I know.
Lauren.
But yeah, I'll send them all to you so you can read them.
Yes.
Or actually, you have access to them because they're in our messages.
Oh, right.
So that's the disappearance
that's
of Ambrose and Ambrose Small. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully there'll be an update at a
we
later
don't know.
Episode.
Stay in your lane.
Yuck, but yes. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
So I forgot what I chose. You're welcome, and I'm sorry.
I believe the quote is, I'm sorry and you're welcome.
I think it's oops and you're welcome.
Yeah, you're right. Oops and you're welcome.
Okay, I think this is really interesting, and I hope you do too.
Uh-oh.
The subject of my book report today is slime mold. So it's actually really cool. So my sources are the PBS Nova episode, The Secret Mind of Slime.
I want to watch that.
It's so good. An article in Scientific American called How Brainless Slime Mold Redefines Intelligence, and a New York Times article called Emergence by Stephen Johnson.
I don't like this is unsolved.
I know, it's really upsetting. So slime mold, or Dictyostelium discoideum.
Is it a disco girl?
Yes.
Great.
It's not a fungus, but it's also not an animal and it's not a plant.
No, it's a disco diva.
It's a disco diva. So biologists aren't sure where slime molds fit into the tree of life. It seems that they branched off before plants.
They're on the trunk, obviously.
They branched off before plants, fungi, and animals even existed. They are eukaryotes. The scientific term for what they are is now mycetazoa. Myceto referring to fungus and zoa referring to animals.
The powerhouse of the cell, yes, I know.
I've read estimates between 900 and 1,000 different species of slime mold that we know of. Some scientists that I consulted.
Did you?
No. Some scientists and the sources I used.
Some tried to sneak that one by me. We don't do interviews for this show.
No, no, no. Some people suggested that it's probably a massive underestimate to say 1,000. When slime molds are dormant, they can last a very long time. One spore in a lab germinated after 60 years of being dormant.
So it was alive, but it was just like dormant.
He was asleep and then he woke up after 60 years.
Cool.
Slime molds are estimated to be 40 million years old. Some are multicellular and some are single cellular, but both are basically just like globs of either cells or like cell parts that are like in puddles, basically. So the serious study of slime molds didn't start until the 1960s. Scientists knew at this time that slime mold cells emitted something called cyclic adenosine monophosphate, which is a derivative of ATP, which we learned in high school and then forgot, is a compound that is, according to Wikipedia, quote, the molecular unit of currency. Cells use it to transfer energy.
I love that it was like the 60s, and so they were like, we were doing the space race, and then someone just got assigned to slime mold.
No, you choose slime mold. No, slime mold chooses you.
Yeah, there you go.
Everyone who studies slime mold has these stories where they're like, actually, I was an aerospace engineer, and then one day someone showed me slime mold, and I never wanted to look at anything else ever again.
That's what I'm saying.
It's really cool. So the accepted assumption at the time, as published in 1962 by a one B.M. Schaefer, was that many cells of slime mold were able to aggregate or like form the globs and work together because the majority of the cells were being controlled by a few what they're calling pacemaker cells that were like calling the shots for the entire colony.
Oh, no. Is the slime mold capitalist?
Don't worry. It's not.
Okay, great. Is it democratic?
No. Socialist.
Great.
The only problem with Schaefer's theory was that no one could find the pacemaker cells.
They were remote?
It was remote pacemaker cells. So everyone who studied slime mold agreed that all the cells in the glob were effectively interchangeable. None of them possessed any distinguishing characteristics that would make them pacemakers.
Same.
So mycologists assumed that the missing pacemaker cells were just a sign of insufficient data or like bad experiments.
Mm-hmm.
But something interesting about the pacemaker theory is that humans are naturally predisposed to think about systems as having some sort of hierarchy or having pacemakers. It's known as top-down decision-making. Mm-hmm. And it's like our bodies are aggregations controlled by a brain, which is our pacemaker. Our societies are controlled by pacemakers.
Lizard people.
Yes, of course, in the earth. So it's like it stands to reason that humans would think that slime mold works the same way.
Right.
But what if it doesn't?
Ancient slime mold theorists say no.
So in 1968, Evelyn...
Well, this is like almost when we went to the moon.
We went to the moon in 1969. Not 1970, but a year sooner. Then they rhyme sooner with lunar.
I know.
So... In 1968, Evelyn Fox Keller, a Harvard PhD in physics who had written her dissertation on molecular biology, was working as an associate at Sloan Kettering in Manhattan, thinking about the application of mathematics to biological problems. And that spring, she met a visiting scholar named Lee Siegel, who introduced her to slime mold. And she was like, this is the only thing I want for the rest of my life forever.
Mm-hmm.
So
they were married on April 1st, 1969.
I wish. They began to work together to study slime mold. And instead of continuing Schaefer's work on the pacemaker cells, Keller and Siegel took inspiration from another scientist, Alan Turing.
For some reason in my brain, I knew you were going to say that.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hate that.
I know. Sorry.
It's fine. The hive mind has been complete.
Yeah.
So one of Turing's last papers that was published before his death in 1954 was about morphogenesis, which is the capacity...
That new Marvel movie? I know. It's...
I know. They're going to turn it into a series. It's going to be... it would be Jared Leto. morphogenesis is the capacity of all life forms to progress from simple to more complex, organized, and spatially differentiated forms. Turing's paper focused on the recurring mathematical patterns in flowers, but it demonstrated, using math, how a complex organism could assemble itself without any pacemaker calling the shots.
Cool.
Turing sketched out a mathematical model wherein simple agents following simple rules could generate amazingly complex structures. And Keller and Siegel thought maybe the slime mold cells were a real-world example of the mathematical model that Turing proposed. And they were like, maybe we can use that math to solve the problem of the missing slime mold pacemakers. Maybe there aren't pacemakers at all. So they came up with a series of equations that demonstrated how slime mold cells could trigger aggregation without following a leader simply by altering the amount of cyclic AMP they released individually, then following the trails of the pheromone that they encountered as they wandered through the environment. So the cells would go as a group, and if one of them finds something, it squirts out more cyclic AMP, and everyone else is like, oh, he found something, and they go with him. They published a paper in 1969. The year we went to the moon, which this is a quote from the New York Times article, said that, quote, if the slime cells pumped out enough cyclic AMP, clusters of cells would start to form. This would happen because the slime mold cells would begin following trails created by other cells, creating a positive feedback loop that encouraged more cells to join the cluster.
It's kind of like how bees dance.
Yeah.
And they leave like a little dance.
Yeah.
And then the other bees are like, ooh, 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 ooh. Or like when bros go bar hopping and they just, like they find a good one. So they squirt out like a little text to everybody.
Ew, I don't and then like they that leave, you said squirt.
I'm just using your language. And then they leave like a little trail of like...
Axe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
The bros are socialist. Go on.
If only. So,
no, in this story, they are. That's what I'm saying.
Our bros are socialist. Mm-hmm. So, since Keller and Siegel's work, the study of slime mold has continued, and Keller and Siegel's discovery that slime mold cells function without any pacemaker cells is just the tip of the iceberg that is the Madonna stuff that we now know and don't know about slime mold. So, There are a few teams around the world leading the field in slime mold research. There's one in Sydney, Australia. There's one in Japan. There's one in Germany. And there's one in Boston. These labs are all focused on one specific species of slime mold, Physarum polycephalum, which is a single-celled version of slime mold. How is it single-celled? I'll tell you. It's basically just...
the question everyone's been asking.
It's a cool question.
You've all been waiting for the answer.
So it's basically just thousands or even millions...
Milliums. Milliums sounds like a slime, like the name of a slime mold.
This is Millium.
Yeah. This is my pet mold, Millium.
You can keep it as a pet.
Can you name it Millium?
Yeah.
Great. Done.
Get ready for Christmas.
Is our mascot going to be a slime mold?
Named Millium?
Like, yeah, like the mystery team slime molds. And it's like, it's just like a, you know what I mean? Like a mascot in a suit and like, it's green and it's just.
Physarum is actually yellow.
It's yellow and his name is Millium.
Great. No notes. If anyone can draw.
Whatever you do, don't draw that. I was just going to say that.
So it's basically.
If we get a bunch of emails and DMs of people who drew Millium. I'm going to lose my mind.
If you just Google Physarum polycephalum, you can see what. It looks like.
Oh, thank God no one's going to know how to spell that.
P-H-Y. So it's thousands or millions of nuclei with one large cell wall. So they're all floating around.
Something about me hates something about that.
Yeah, I thought you might. But it was too late in the research. So they can get big, like maybe the size of like a personal pan pizza.
I'm going to start measuring everything in pan pizzas.
He's about six pan pizzas tall. Physarum is the favorite for researchers because it's easy to grow in a lab. And also, it's fucking crazy.
It's a pan pizza-sized single cell, just full of nuclei?
Yep.
Hate this.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a mystery. So, Physarum is bright yellow. It kind of looks like... if you, like, took a piece of coral and reduced it to, like, 30%.
It's like that Goosebumps book / episode where there's, like, something living under the sea.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. Physarum, one of the reasons Physarum or slime molds in general are not fungi is because they move. And they move by... they send out little, like, veins that kind of look fractal. They look like fractals to explore. So here I'm going to talk to you about the team's experiments and what they can teach us about slime mold. So the first question that we ask about slime mold is, what is slime mold actually made of? So it brings us back to the question of slime mold pacemakers. We know that instead of having a brain that tells the body what to do, slime mold is actually totally decentralized. Every little bit of slime mold is essentially deciding for itself what to do.
As it should.
Right? But it's a single-celled organism. So what is a bit of slime mold? Like, what's a little piece of slime mold? So scientists actually don't know the answer to this. But in Bremen, Germany, Hans-Günther Dobereiner and his team shredded a piece of Physarum into thousands of tiny little fragments to try to find out. And
not very nice.
No, but don't worry. It's fine. So what remained were random bits of a goopy substance called protoplasm. Under a microscope,
Phantom.
Under a microscope, the bits pulse and then they join up to form an interconnected network, which then reassembles itself into the veins that we know Physarum as. Mm-mm. So you can shred it and she'll be fine. What's interesting is that Physarum's bits are interchangeable. So Han says, a dog is always a dog. A bacterium is always a bacterium. But Physarum is more like a transformer, a natural biological transformer. Meaning that any part of slime mold can recreate any other part of slime mold. Nova says, basically think of slime mold as a soup. And there are all these pieces floating in the broth that can come together and organize. And they can, like, pack tightly to form a vein, or they can pack less tightly together to form the cytoplasm. And any one of the bits in slime mold can do any of that.
So it's like if soup was almost sentient.
Yeah, but it's more of like a porridge.
It's like if porridge was almost sentient. Like, it's like if porridge had stuff to do.
It's if the porridge was very busy.
Right.
You know?
It's if the porridge had a plan.
The porridge is like, I'm going to get up early. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to eat a healthy breakfast.
The porridge is that girl.
The porridge is that girl.
The porridge would be big on TikTok.
Okay.
How I have that how I became that porridge.
How to be that porridge. Tips part two.
That porridge makeup. Clean porridge makeup. We're going on hot porridge walks.
So the next question of slime mold is, how does it move? Specifically, how does one giant cell move without appendages? So Hans and his team are studying the mechanics of Physarum's movement, and they found that the stream of protoplasm that we talked about, that's also called cyclic AMP, that's also called cytoplasm, is what from what I understand. It flows within the veins, the vein structure, which is one source I used called that cytoplasmic streaming. The flow of the
protoplasm. Future of television.
Oh my God. We're moving past streaming platforms to cytoplasmic streaming, only available on DirecTV. We're clawing our way back into relevancy. So the flow of the protoplasm is produced by proteins that wrap around the veins and rhythmically squeeze and relax, which propels the protoplasm through the veins to the growth front, which is like the toes of the veins. The pulsing itself is controlled by receptors. So slime molds have receptors all over their body, which can detect chemicals in the environment. These receptors are similar to our sense of smell, but they sense chemicals and they need soil or a liquid medium like the surface of a petri dish. They can detect moisture, pH, and sunlight and light. They have photoreceptors on globes. It's so cool. So once the receptor detects food, it triggers the part of the slime mold that it's closest, that's closest to the food to start pulsing faster so that the protoplasm flows in that direction. And then all the cells are like, that guy found it. And they all go that way. So from that, we know that Physarum has an awareness of its environment. It has an ability to navigate and it seems to move with a purpose.
Sentient soup.
Yes. We also know that Physarum reacts and adapts to its environment consistently and efficiently, and it will move toward a substance like sugar or away from a substance like salt consistently. So then the question that arises is, does Physarum simply react to these things, or does it take in information and then make a choice?
Does Physarum simply react to these things, or does it take in information and make a choice?
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So the team in Sydney performed an experiment in which they presented...
You did not tell me we were in Australia.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Sydney, Australia, Japan, Germany, and Boston.
You didn't even do a voice.
I will.
Did you say all these things?
Yeah.
Prove it.
Okay. Can we roll that clip? Don't worry. I'll do it in an accent.
Thank you.
So the team in Sydney performed an experiment in which they presented Physarum with a basic choice. what to eat.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How is she going to choose? Yeah.
Don't present your girlfriends with this one.
Men.
The purpose of this experiment was to see how Physarum regulates its nutritional needs. In labs, Physarum will only eat oats.
Oh.
Yeah. Picky little bitches.
Overnight oats?
No, no.
That porridge.
But in its natural environment, it'll eat, it feeds on mostly rotting vegetation, but they eat the yeast and bacteria associated with decay. So they don't eat decomposed things. They eat the organisms responsible for decomposition, which again makes them different from fungi. So for the experiment, the team in Sydney created 35 different what they call custards.
And they, science.
They each had a particular ratio of protein to sugar.
All right, so we're going to take the soup. We're going to give it some custards.
All right, so we got
science.
We're going to make a custard for the soup. So they then placed Physarum on each of the mixtures, and they learned that if Physarum has too much protein, it splits apart, and if it has too much sugar, it dies. So they determined what the optimal combo of sugar and protein was, and then they began the experiment, which is they offered Physarum a buffet of 7 custards, each with a different ratio of sugar to protein, and the goal was to see if Physarum could find the custard that wouldn't kill it.
Mm-hmm. This seems like an unfair game.
It wasn't all. They were
this
all
is like,
fatal.
Do you want to play a game? Only one of these custards isn't fatal.
Only one of them was fatal, to be fair.
Okay. That's still like...
But the rest were like yucky.
One of these custards is fatal. The rest are simply yucky.
So Physarum is very, very slow. So it took 24 hours at least for it to like get to the custard mm-hmm. and taste it. So they recorded the experiments with time-lapse photography, which is how everybody records slime mold. So you can see it going like... And so what happens is they put the 7 custards out. They put the Physarum in its little petri dish, and it like sends out its what are called pseudopods, or the mm-hmm. fractal veins. And when it finds one, it like tastes it, and then it will be like, yum, and it'll send more.
It'll be like,
yeah. Mm. And it brings its friends over, or it'll be like, yuck, and leave and mm-hmm. go to the next one. So it finds the one with the optimal ratio of sugar to protein, and it abandons all of the other veins and sucks all the rest of it over to the one with the optimal ratio.
But it leaves its little explorer guys out there?
No, it takes them back.
Oh, you said it abandons.
Yeah. So it's like it forms the veins and then it unforms them.
Oh, it's just like, we don't need that.
We don't need that yeah. anymore. Yeah. So then the question is, has Physarum made a decision in that experiment?
Has Physarum made a decision in that experiment?
One of the researchers in Sydney says, you have to be careful using words like decision or choice. We're not saying they have feelings or that they are thinking or making those decisions the same way that we do. What we are saying is that slime molds are able to make choices because if you give them an option between two or more items, they will consistently make certain choices over others.
Wow.
So basically, they showed conclusively that Physarum takes in information about its environment and turns it into action, which you can kind of argue is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next question is...
I would argue that that's better decision-making than most humans.
Better decision-making than I've ever made.
Most of us don't actually take in very much information about the environment before making the decision.
No, and rarely do I turn it into action.
Right.
I'm just paralyzed by anxiety. Physarum does not have anxiety.
No, that we know of.
Well, it kind of does. We'll get to it. So if Physarum can make a choice, in a sense, what the fuck else can it do?
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
What the fuck? How else can it do a lot?
So you're just like, they gave a cue card to a kid with no yeah. punctuation.
Yeah.
So the team at Hokkaido University in Japan is led by Professor Toshiyuki Nakagaki. And Toshiyuki's team's broader focus in their research is on analyzing cells in general using physics and math. So what they wanted to see was how slime mold reacts when faced with a task traditionally posed to animals, solving a maze.
Does it procrastinate?
Yes. They placed Physarum over the entire surface of a maze. And they put an oat at the entrance and the exit.
One oat.
One little oat, because their Physarum is so small. And they wanted to see how it would handle the presence of two food sources. So basically, what it did was it put its fingers on the food. And then one by one, it eliminated all the pathways of the maze that it didn't need anymore.
Cool.
So basically, it solved a fucking maze.
Yeah.
And it used the shortest path. That's it didn't, amazing. Like, take a random route.
Wait, so, but did it try any other routes?
Well, for this one, they put it all over the maze.
Oh.
So they put it in all the nooks and crannies, mm-hmm. and then it retracted it all was the like, ones it didn't need. It was like, don't need you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was the shortest route.
Great.
But then the team was like, 2 points is easy.
Yeah.
So they kept increasing the points that it had to connect, and they eventually made it to 37 points.
What?
The number of possible ways to connect 37 points is somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 times 10 to the 53rd.
Sure.
And every time, Physarum finds the most efficient way mm-hmm. to connect all the points. So to make it interesting.
So they put like 37 oats around it?
Yeah.
In like different little like maze exits. Mm-hmm. And it was like this one, mm-hmm. not that one.
Yep.
This one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Milliam is genius. So
maybe Milliam should be our VA.
He's so slow.
Yeah, that's fair.
So then the team was like,
we got to stop offering jobs.
Stop offering jobs to our listeners. Milliam is like, wait, I think I could do it.
Aww.
He's an ent.
You're going to be that porridge, Milliam.
Milliam, you're going to be that porridge. So
that soup.
They gave Physarum next a real world problem. They put it on a petri dish. And they were like, you, Physarum, are Tokyo. And then they placed oat flakes around it to represent the main towns and cities around Tokyo. And
I love where this is going.
Yeah. As Physarum discovered the oat flakes, it reconfigured its network. It reinforced the links between the food sources, made the ones that it didn't need disappear. And what they ended up with was something that looked astonishingly like the actual yeah. Tokyo metro system.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then the Nova says, Physarum had created an optimal network. It had done something in 26 hours that took human engineers almost 100 years to accomplish.
Astonishingly slow or astonishingly fast?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really fair to the human engineers because they did have to deal with infrastructure. And Physarum, I think, was neglecting that.
Mm.
I don't know where our taxes are going, but Milliam is not spending them responsibly.
When you said they gave it a real world problem, I thought it was going to be like, put this change back in the wallet while everyone waits in line behind you. See about
Figure
that,
Figure out
Milliam.
What you want to order without yeah. having looked at the menu before getting to the restaurant. React to waving to someone who you thought was waving at you, but then was waving at someone behind you. Recover from that, Physarum.
Politely decline an invitation from your family to go to a lunch.
Okay. I bet Physarum could do all those things.
Me too.
It would just be like, don't need that.
Just retracting itself.
So something that the teams noticed while they were doing these experiments was that when Physarum was searching, it never went back over a place that it had already explored. So they thought that this seemed to imply that Physarum was somehow remembering where it had been, but not the way that we do with brains. So how was it doing it? What they noticed was that Physarum leaves behind a trail of slime when it retracts its fingers. kind of in the same way that ants leave a trail of pheromones to mark where they've been, and then the other ants follow that to the food. So scientists thought that Physarum was using the slime as an external form of memory. So they did another experiment. This experiment was called the U-shaped trap. U-shaped traps were actually used in early machine learning research to test things like a robot's navigational memory. In the experiments, a robot is given a goal, which it can sense, and then that goal is placed on the other side of a U-shaped barrier that it cannot sense. Robots without a system of memory got trapped in the U and were unable to navigate around it. So in the slime mold experiment, Physarum's goal was oat. So it sensed when it was placed in behind the U-shaped trap. It sensed the food source, went straight toward it, hit the wall, and then when it and then it like backed up and reassessed and was like, try again, queen. And then when it tried to go back the same way, it sensed that it had already been there. So it took a step back and then it went around the wall and it got oat.
Oh my God.
So the team then tortured Milliam a little bit. It performed the experiment again, but this time they covered the environment with slime to make Physarum think it had already been there. And then with the surface covered in slime, Physarum got stuck and he couldn't figure out how to get out.
He couldn't find
he
oat.
Got stuck. Oh. He couldn't get oat. So the conclusion then is that Physarum slime trail does serve as external memory.
Yeah. It's like then, a backup drive.
It is. It's an external hard drive. Don't lose it, Kayla. It's expensive. So then researchers took their experiments further into the spectrum of intelligence to see if Physarum could learn. Specifically, the team in Sydney wanted to test if Physarum could habituate, which is one of the most basic types of learning in brained creatures. Habituation is the diminishing of a physiological or emotional response to a frequently repeated stimulus. So, like, the example they give in Nova is the pigeons in St. Mark's Square see humans so much that they learn not to be afraid of them.
Right.
So in Sydney, what they did was they placed a bridge between Physarum and Snack. It was a few centimeters long. The control Physarum made the crossing of the bridge to Snack in about an hour. Then they coated the bridge in salt. Not enough to harm it, but enough to be yucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it took...
Yes, but yuck.
It was yes, but yuck. It took the Physarum 10 hours to cross the salt bridge. But then on day two, the same Physarum only took 8 hours to cross the salt bridge.
Hmm.
And by day five, it had crossed the salt bridge in the same amount of time as it took the control Physarum to cross the bridge.
It was learning not to be scared of pigeons.
Salt. It was learning not to be pigeons of humans.
Yeah.
So what they learned is Physarum ended up getting used to a substance it didn't like. So it was habituating to the salt. If Physarum had learned that the salt wasn't harmful, then this would mean that somewhere inside of Physarum, there is a form of memory.
Mm-hmm.
So they repeated the experiment 4,000 times on 4,000 different pieces of Physarum, and the results were consistent across the board. Physarum had altered its behavior based on past experiences, which is a fundamental definition of learning.
The mold can learn.
Milliam is graduating. My brain went dun dun da da dun da.
Oh, is Milliam the president now?
I always get all of the like congratulatory songs mixed up.
The wedding march, the graduation song, and the president song.
I don't know if you asked me what they were. I would like even in this moment. I don't know.
The wedding march, vitamin C's.
Graduation. Time of our life. What is that song? Green Day?
You're thinking of Green Day, yeah. Hope you had the time of your life is the lyric.
What is it called?
I don't remember what the title
it's
is.
It's like Redemption or something.
No.
It starts with an R.
It's not Redemption. Not Revenge?
No. Somebody in their car is like screaming the title. And you know what? I'm not even going to look it up.
I'm going to think of it in a second.
Okay. I can picture the like iTunes screen in my little iPod Nano. Not Nano. What's the little one?
Shuffle. No, that one doesn't have.
Nano.
Nano. Yeah.
Fuck. We'll come. It'll happen. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next step in the experiment, they decided, was to see if one piece of physarum could transfer what it had learned to another piece of physarum. So they took...
No, you have to learn from yourself. Because no matter how many times you tell your best friend...
not to go back to him.
Mm-hmm. They have to learn for themselves.
I know. Well, physarum is decentralized. So. They don't put up with that wishy-washy dating bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm looking for something real.
Mm-hmm.
So they took physarum bits that had been habituated to salt and combined them with physarum that hadn't been habituated yet, which they called naive physarum. They learned that if the two pieces were allowed to fuse together for 3 hours, then the information did pass from the physarum to the naive physarum. And the naive physarum now was habituated to salt. And it looked like the memory was passed through the system of veins somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that physarum could communicate the information it learned. Side note, the team in Sydney and Nova, they describe that physarum from different places had different behaviors, like they have personalities.
What?
They said that the Japanese physarum is fast but prone to making hasty and bad decisions. The Australian slime mold is careful and well-mannered and much more consistent from one day to another, and it does not try to escape, which physarum often does. If you don't feed it, it will crawl out of its petri dish to find food.
Oh, lordy.
Yeah. They said the American one is problematic.
Correct.
When it arrived in Sydney, they gave it organic oat flakes and it would only eat like the American brand of oat.
So the problem is that as soon as something starts like developing the ability to learn, it also develops prejudice.
Or does it develop brand loyalty?
That's very American. Americans rebranding prejudice as brand loyalty is the most American thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I'm not prejudiced. I'm brand loyal. So then
the American slime mold was like, you ain't got Quaker.
I only eat Quaker.
Jinx.
So, yeah, it was, and it was Quaker oat brand.
Was it?
Yeah. And they have like pictures of it.
What kind of sham science are you running around here?
You giving me GMOs? I don't want the government tracking. Yeah. We have to cut this out. This is very brand loyal of me.
Yeah, this is very brand loyal.
So the team in Japan then, I think that these scientists get a little carried away in the best way possible. They're like, okay, can it learn? Can it drive?
Get to the moon?
So the next thing they did was, can slime mold tell time? And then I wrote, this is an oversimplification of the concept, but I couldn't think of another way to phrase it. But I think it's like, can it sense time?
Yeah.
So they designed an experiment in which they placed physarum in a groove in an agar plate in a warm, humid environment, which is its favorite. So physarum like crawled along, and then every 30 minutes, scientists dropped the temperature and decreased the humidity. And in response, the physarum slowed down to conserve energy. So they did this a few times and then they stopped doing it.
Right.
But
they classically conditioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Physarum continued to slow down every 30 minutes on the dot.
Okay, great.
They have no idea how it does this.
Yes.
They think that it might like keep track of its own pulsing somehow and use that as an inner clock, but they have no idea. And then there's a team at the Allen Discovery Center at Tufts that is led by Michael Levin, and they perform experiments in which they listen in on electrical signals exchanged by cells or bioelectricity. Electrical signals allow cells to join into networks and process information and make decisions, and it was previously thought that these cognitive processes could only be performed by many different cells communicating with one another. But then they were like, can Physarum do that? And the answer was, yeah, that's what it does. But then they were like, is Physarum maybe using bioelectricity as its system of internal memory? So the first thing they did was test its veins for signs of bioelectric signals. They found that it did produce electrical waves and that those electrical waves matched the flow of the protoplasm and the pulsing of the veins. So Michael Levin says that in their experiments, they were basically, quote, attempting to essentially read the mind of the Physarum. They noted that Physarum's body structure and behavior are simultaneous, meaning the behavior of the slime mold is executed by altering its body structure. This means that if it was communicating internally using bioelectric signals, those signals should change along with Physarum's shape. Mm-hmm. So Michael's colleague, Andrew Adamatsky, performed a series of experiments in which he tried to communicate with Physarum by sending it electrical signals. And he found that different signals caused Physarum to grow in different ways. And that signals sent between two points made it reconfigure its body as it would between two oats.
What?
Yes.
This is like when Dory spoke whale.
Yes. And there were signals that repelled Physarum, which caused it to shift away from the source of the signal, just like with salt. So they basically showed that Physarum is using bioelectricity to process information.
That's so cool. And so, we can speak slime mold.
It's like, beep, 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 beep. So what we've learned is that without a brain or nervous system, Physarum is capable of making choices, solving complex problems, and devising strategies. And this evidence is forcing scientists to ask a question that makes many of them uncomfortable. Is slime mold intelligent?
Yay!
So in order to answer that question, first you have to answer this question. How does one define intelligence? The issue that the scientists in NOVA specifically point to is that the idea of intelligence is so tightly linked to human beings that it's hard to discuss intelligence in other organisms. We know that for centuries, scientists believed that intelligence or the ability to reason and think was unique to Homo sapiens. But then in the mid-20th century, researchers documented cognitive abilities in primates and then other animals farther and farther on the evolutionary tree from us. We know that chimps and crows use tools, whales and dolphins use sound to communicate complex ideas, birds have memories of places, things, and past events, sea lions grasp logic, and there's evidence that animals can count. Toshiyuki says, a commonly accepted idea is that the only living organisms who display intelligence are those with a nervous system and brain. I say with certainty that I believe this idea is wrong. In my opinion, I call this intelligent behavior, this being what Physarum does. So people say that no matter whether you think that Physarum is truly intelligent, organisms like slime mold provide an important window into evolution's earliest experiments into problem solving. So Physarum is basically, all slime mold is basically how intelligence and decision-making started. And they were also the earliest forms of specialized cells, basically. Like, they were not specialized, but that is the early stage of evolution into the specialized cells and multicellular life that we see.
Physarum glooped so that we could run.
Or not run.
You know? So that we could have the choice whether or not.
Physarum glooped so that we could choose brand loyalty. There's also a lot of talk, like there's a lot of TED Talks that are like, what slime mold can teach us about socialism and like stuff like that. And they're also using slime mold, like mapping it mathematically and using that in a lot of technology and computing. So I think this is not the last we'll see of Fine Serum.
Stay tuned for an update. Slime mold update.
Yeah, I mean, there's
here new... on the Slime Mold Show. You're watching Slime Mold time. Channel. Oh. You like draw a slime mold. Disney.
It's yeah. It's like tiny fractals.
Yeah. I was just gonna draw like a pan pizza. Oh.
So that is the mystery of slime mold. I hope it scared you a little.
I was a little scared, but then I learned to like it.
Yeah, like salt.
Sure.
Yeah.
I habituated to it. Wow. Who knew we liked slime mold?
I freaking love slime mold.
Yeah, now this is the only thing I want to study. Yeah. I get it.
There are teams in Australia, Japan, Germany, and Boston who can help you with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Slime mold?
You know, our slime mold's pretty smart.
Dang.
Yeah. Dang indeed. If I find more, because you know I'm going to set a Google alert for slime mold.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'll let everyone know. The Nova episode is really, really good. You do have to subscribe to PBS. So now when PBS says, and thanks to all of our whatever, I'm one of those. We are technically. We're making art.
From our business account?
Yes. It's
subscribers like us.
Yeah. Is that what it says?
No, I don't think so.
I think it says viewers like you. Yeah. But I'm not just a viewer.
We're subscribers. That's why. Yeah. Don't worry. I did the math in my head real quick.
It's $5
right.
a month.
That's okay. Great.
Yeah. That's all I have on slime.
Good ball. Mystery.
Thanks. I know that it was hard to get into.
No, you told me like 3 weeks ago, like, you're going to love my next mystery.
Yeah.
So then when you introduced it, I was like, I can't wait to figure out why I like this.
And you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, then I eventually figured it out.
You habituated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was doing a lot of this research at work at lunch. Mm-hmm. And every time someone came into my office, I would be like, did you know that slime mold can solve mazes? You know what's so cool? If you put it on a petri dish and then you make Tokyo, it'll make the subway system. And they're like, oh, God.
You're like, did you know it has gloopy toes?
Its toes are like fractals and then sometimes they go away. Yeah. I love him so much. I'm really glad we have our new mascot.
Milliam.
I'm really glad that we let the mascot decision come to us, as slime mold does for everybody.
Yeah. Slime mold finds you.
Slime mold finds
you. Oh, chooses you. Yeah. You don't choose slime mold. Slime mold chooses you.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
We don't know. Thanks for listening.
We don't know.
Stay in your maze.
Buckle the buck up.
Slime smooches. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
For now.